This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, KenaiSoul.na. I'm Jenny Nyman, and it's time for the Kenai Conversation. Got some entertainment lined up for us this hour, or at least talking to some people in the business of entertaining. We've got representatives of the Kenai Performers and Triumvirate Theater this hour. You know, in a normal year, we would probably be putting into our schedules a show from either the Kenai Performers or Triumvirate Theater. That's been a little tough to pull off this year for both organizations. Their shows have changed, schedules have changed, methods of performance have changed. But the goals of the organizations have not, to still provide entertainment for the Central Kenai Peninsula. On the show today, we've got Rebecca Gilman, producer for Murder in the Cathedral and a Kenai Performers board member, Paul Morin, director for Murder in the Cathedral, and we've got Joe Rizzo, who is the executive director of Triumvirate Theater. Let's start with the Kenai Performers, folks, since you guys have a show coming up now. You should probably be rehearsing or some such. So, Paul, since you're directing, why don't you tell us about Murder in the Cathedral?
Absolutely. So we're happy to be putting on Murder in the Cathedral by T.S. Eliot. It's in the form of a liturgical verse drama set to a play, and we're scheduled to have performances take place this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so February 19th, 20th, and 21st, and then next weekend as well, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, February 26th, 27th, and 28th.
So, liturgical verse drama, what exactly might that be?
I know, it sounds pretty intense, and it is, but it's a lot of fun. So basically, what T.S. Eliot did was he took the story, the historical figure of Thomas Becket, and he set the history of Thomas Becket to a play. But instead of just giving us straight lines, as you would normally find in a play, he actually set it to verse. And so this is literally a play that's set in poetry. So whenever you have your various actors who come on stage, you have a Greek choir, a Greek chorus, you have actors and actresses, when they come on stage, they're not delivering straight lines, they're actually delivering poetry, as the entire play is in verse. And then it's liturgical, because what T.S. Eliot did was he took this play and he took this history and he set it to the theme of an actual form of worship. And so the entire play is organized in telling the story of St. Thomas Becket in the form of a sort of responsorial back and forth worship style, as you would typically find in some higher church forms of worship, such as Catholicism, Anglicanism, etc. And so those are all the things that are going on in this play, and it's really exciting.
Wow, that sounds like a lot to tackle for a community theater group. That's a little outside of the box for what the Kenai Performers would normally, quote-unquote normal, if we can think back that far, be doing in February, which of course would be the giant Kenai Performers winter musical, Disney related usually. So,
well, now I want Paul to do the rest of this interview in verse. Paul, could you do that?
I'm sorry, I'm no T.S. Eliot, so I don't think I can manage that. But you're right, Jenny. This is definitely a departure of sorts, but at the same time, it's kind of appropriate. When we were looking back over the course of this year and looking at everything that Kenai Performers has actually done in the past, we noticed and were able to look back in our history and see that actually in 1967, the organizers and the founders of the group that would eventually come to be known as Kenai Performers actually put on a choral presentation of T.S. Eliot's poem Ash Wednesday. And so it's kind of cool because right now we're actually entering into the season of Lent, Ash Wednesday being actually this coming Wednesday. And so in the course of also celebrating our 40th anniversary as a formally organized nonprofit organization, it's kind of cool in a way because we've essentially bookended ourselves with T.S. Eliot. So we're really excited at that.
Nice. Kind of a little throwback to history and reinvention for the future. Sort of the approach that a lot of us are taking to a pandemic, kind of figuring out what has worked and what we can do differently to still go about our lives and organizations and businesses somewhat as usual. So Kenai Performers, you guys have, since last March, had a couple of different attempts at staging shows, entertainment, one online and one in person. And now, how is this one being presented? There's the in-person version. Are you doing any other kind of distance availability with this show?
So yeah, there is, so this is a brand, so as you said, we've done, so we did the, we did Dancing at Lunasa in August, which was a fully in-person show, and that show had originally been slated for May of 2020, so we just weren't able to do it then, and instead we did the Kenai Performers Throwback Facebook Live concert, which was purely online. But then Murder in the Cathedral is going to be both in person and there are live stream performances for each night. So when patrons go to our website to buy tickets for the show, we only are selling 30 seats per night for in-person viewing, so we can keep everyone socially distanced, wearing masks, apart. And then we also have live stream options. So people actually watch the show in real time, seeing that exact same performance of the night. So it's not a pre-recorded thing that we're uploading for people to view after. It's actually live. And, you know, I think it's got like a maybe 3-minute delay, but it's been really cool. We found a new ticketing website to use, and it also has this live stream option. So we're able to actually, we have, you know, people from outside of the state or outside of town or who just still aren't comfortable coming to an event in person, so they can still watch it and participate in the live theater process as much as possible.
That is super interesting to try and walk that line between live and distance. How is that affecting the performance? I mean, are you, I would assume you're kind of a little more concerned about cameras and mics and all that stuff then than you normally would for just a straight in-person show?
So for the camera setup for this, we just have one camera that's set up in the back at the tech table, and we basically just have it as a stationary view. And then I don't want to give too much away of the set design because I know that that's been kind of a secret that we're waiting until the actual show starts, but it involves columns, and we're able to just kind of sneakily place a microphone on the back of one of the columns so it can pick up the actors. And then the online audience still has pretty good audio. And with the ticketing software that we have right now, we're able to actually watch rehearsals as they're live streamed too. So we can like hear, you know, how it's sounding, see how it's looking on the live stream camera and stuff. So we can be like, okay, we need to, you know, adjust these levels for the live stream people as well to get them the best experience as possible too.
Okay. So twice the technical hassle for one performance. Gotcha. Okay. I think that's kind of the boat that a lot of performers, whether it's music or theater or dance or whatnot, are in right now, is trying to figure out how to still do your thing, provide entertainment during a pandemic in a way that is safe, but in a way that also isn't, you know, breaking the bank for you guys and creating more headaches than enjoyment for everyone involved. So Triumvirate, how have you guys been operating over the last couple of months? You have not done anything in person, correct?
Right. No, we haven't done any kind of live event. I can't, for me, it's not, it's too stressful to like have to make people wear masks and all that. The other thing I worry about as far as this pandemic goes is litigation. If we were to create some kind of super spreader event, you know, would we legally be liable for that? That's a lot of businesses are worrying about that.
Kenai Performers, is that something that you guys have been discussing? The two of you both work in the legal profession.
That's right. Paul can probably tell me that my fears are unwarranted, probably.
Well, and this is Paul. I can't give legal advice, but no, that is something that we've had to consider seriously. And what we've found, I think, interacting with individuals in the community, asking individuals in the community what they think they would be willing to attend, in what medium, when, how they'd like to attend. But the group of people that probably are going to be buying our tickets to attend in person, to watch the theater production as it's actually happening live and in person, are individuals who, for the most part, are probably, to be charitable, I guess, find themselves at one end of the spectrum when it comes to thoughts, feelings, and perspectives on the global pandemic, as opposed to, say, another spectrum. And so really, when we're looking at the people who are willing to come in person, you know, notwithstanding whatever our own mitigation policies are, it constitutes a group of people who, in a sense, are willing to take that risk. But at the same time, you know, we're not taking that at face value. It's also a matter of us making sure that we have an environment that's appropriate, that we're taking the measures necessary to make sure that we're on par with other community organizations that are opening up their businesses and still transacting with individuals on a, you know, person-by-person basis. So those two things coupled together have made it possible for Kenai performers to move forward comfortably the way that we are.
And I will say, too, for specific audience mitigation procedures that we're following for this. So every single audience member, they have to buy a ticket either by calling myself or by using our online ticketing website. And when they use the online ticketing, it requires you to answer a survey at the end, which includes your phone number, and then explains our policies, which are that all audience members have to wear a face covering and then submit to a temperature check when they come in. And then I'm able to generate, you know, those reports and, you know, see and make sure that everyone has answered yes, that they're willing to do that. And in the case of, you know, if someone says no, that they're not, then I have their number that we can, you know, call and talk about that in more detail. And if need be, we can refund their tickets if they're not willing to adhere to those policies. So it is an extra level of, you know, kind of stress. And obviously we want as many people to be able to see the show and participate in the live theater experience as possible, but we also want to keep it absolutely as safe as possible for the other audience members and for our performers.
Yeah, for your performers is a whole other level of this then too. Not only is there the public performances, but there's rehearsals and tech and all the volunteers who are involved in putting on a show. And I know for the last show you did, Dancing at Lunasa, that was kind of a combination of in-person rehearsals to begin with back in the spring, and then you guys switched to Zoom rehearsals, I believe. How are you guys handling that process with this show?
I'll let Paul describe the audition rehearsal process.
It's been quite the adventure, but we've used all available means of being able to have rehearsals. So for example, for a period of time, we were doing strictly Zoom rehearsals, and that worked well enough just for purposes of being able to get together, go through the script, review, making sure we were keeping things fresh in our minds for the actors and the actresses. Other times we've had rehearsals actually in our performance space, and we've had masks on during the entirety of that process. And then just like Rebecca mentioned, we used the same protocols that we're going to be using for the audience when they come in to watch. If they're going to come in, watch the performance in person, we check temperatures. We ask individuals to voluntarily fill out information about whether they feel that they're experiencing any of the various symptoms associated with COVID, so that we can keep track of that. And so that's how we've been handling it. Originally, our hope was to have had this performance completed and actually done in early December, but various factors just made that impossible. So, you know, throughout this entire period of time, we've been using Zoom, we've been using technology as we've had to, we've been masking up, we've been meeting and being careful, sanitizing our hands, making sure people are filling out the COVID sheets, all of that good jazz.
As if scheduling and holding a regular rehearsal weren't complicated enough with, oh, so-and-so's late, or so-and-so can't be here, or so-and-so's got a cold, or whatever, somebody's car broke down. Adding this layer of logistics and concern on top of it, I mean, are you guys still enjoying the process, or is there a certain point of diminishing returns where, like, wow, this is just getting so complicated?
Well, this is Paul, and I can only speak for myself, but I have to, my hat goes off to my cast and the entire production team for Murder in the Cathedral. Everyone has been so patient and so willing to adjust their individual personal life schedules and other things and going on in their lives to make this happen. So, I mean, it's frustrating. It's been a struggle, but better characterized probably just an unforeseen, exciting adventure that we've all sort of travailed through. And again, my hat is off to the entire production team and the cast for being good sports about it, and just, you know, taking each day one day at a time. And, you know, and I had to approach the cast and say, you know, we're not going to be able to hold the show as planned. Are you still going to be able and willing to perform this later? And thankfully, everyone was on board and was comfortable doing that. It's difficult, and it's been a difficult process, but we're just so excited to be able to perform.
Yeah, I would say that's the same feeling I had as well. So I'm directing. We are still doing a musical. We're doing the musical version of Little Women, which originally was going to be this month after Murder in the Cathedral was in December. But when, you know, as Paul was mentioning, when the cases were, you know, really rapidly rising here in October, November, we got together and, you know, made the decision that we were going to move everything back. But at the same time, I actually had my auditions for a musical the weekend of Halloween, where we had originally hoped that we were just going to be able to do it inside our space and, you know, stay far apart from each other. But just with what the cases were at that point, I decided, you know, we can do this over Zoom. So I had, I think, like 45 people audition for that show, and they did that completely via Zoom. And my team and I were just on the computer for about 4 days straight, watching everyone, you know, come prepared with their audition. And my music director, you know, pre-recorded like the accompaniment tracks so people could sing along with it on their own, and people had to prepare things on their own. So it, you know, it's a, anytime you're doing a show, it's a challenge. It's additional challenges, but it's also really gratifying to just see what people are willing to do, because, you know, they want to perform and they love, you know, this art that we get to create. So it's been really inspiring. I'm happy that I get to, you know, hopefully by May, you know, things will have improved even more in this area and stuff, so we can have a little Murder in the Cathedral is definitely a little more of a somber piece than Little Women and stuff. So I think it'll be, you know, it's a beautiful show and stuff. And then I think by the time we get to like the spring, we'll have, you know, back to kind of what you were saying, Jenny, like, you know, the Kenai performers as normal as people sometimes think of, you know, the big just musical theater fun and stuff. So we'll still get to have that, just in a slightly different order this year.
So flexibility seems to be the order of the day to still do some kind of theater, some kind of performances. Joe, with Triumvirate, what was your schedule? What was your plan for this year? And how has it changed?
Well, in the middle of that, when the pandemic hit in March, we were very, very fortunate because we were right in the middle of a $50,000 budgeted production of Beauty and the Beast up in Wasilla. And if the pandemic had hit, you know, just about 3 weeks earlier, we would have been in big, big trouble. So we were grateful that we were able to finish that show up. And then we were going to go into a version of You Can't Take It With You in the spring, which, of course, did not happen. And then we were planning on doing a production of Mary Poppins for kids at Triumvirate. And we were doing two productions of Frozen, one in Seward and one up in Wasilla. So we had to basically scramble all those plans. And we went immediately to looking at how we were going to do these types of performances online or on the radio. And we found that doing radio shows worked out really well for us. We had, you know, of course, good connections with KSRM Radio. Matt Wilson was delighted. I think that's why Matt got into radio in the first place, was to do radio shows.
he loves the sound effects.
He loves the sound effects, and did you know, a great job with our Lame Ducks and Dark Horses show that we did this fall, because we just couldn't stand the thought of not doing something that we, you know, that political show that we have done for gosh, years and years, almost 10 years now.
And you also had gotten some funding to do a mental health show for teens, which also aired on KDLL and KSRM. How were you planning on running that show? And then how did you end up being able to pull that off?
Well, that that show was basically planned as a radio show from the very beginning.
Oh, okay. That wasn't ever going to be an in-person.
No, that was never going to be an in-person one. We came up with that idea. We were like, well, with all the mental health issues that teenagers are having through this pandemic, because they're so isolated, they can't go to school. We were thinking, well, what can we do? And so we came up with an idea of having radio dramas with our class act drama troupe to kind of portray some of the issues with mental health that kids were experiencing. And then we had a special guest, Dr. Paul
Turner.
Yeah, Dr. Paul Turner, who came on and led a roundtable discussion with our actors on the air, talked about the radio drama, talked about the issues that the radio drama brings up, and what kids can do to help mitigate some of these mental health problems that we were seeing on the rise.
And then you've got another one coming up that you're going to produce and perform in the same way over the radio, and that's your annual fundraiser salmon spoof movie show.
Yes, our fish parody.
And which fish parody are you going with this year?
So this year we decided, since this was going to be on the radio, we might as well do a show that required helicopters and, you know, shootouts and things like that. And so we're doing Fishing Impossible will be the show.
Very good.
This year.
Okay. So how does the rehearsal process work for you guys then? I know with the mental health show, you did some Zoom kind of things and some attempts at sitting in a room far apart kind of things.
Well, you know, when we did that mental health show with teenagers, we did a bunch of rehearsals online with Zoom. But as far as, you know, the fishing parody and even Lame Ducks and Dark Horses, we really just, the adult actors saw the script, you know, really just a few minutes before we recorded it. And, you know, we said, you know, why should anything change? You know, we usually throw those shows together pretty quickly anyway, so what's the difference? So, and that worked out fine. All those folks that we have involved in those shows, since they didn't have to memorize any lines, they're all very, very good actors, good performers. We did have a few hiccups just getting them used to working with a microphone as opposed to a live show. But other than that, it really came together pretty easily.
Not projecting for the cheap seats so much if you got a microphone right in front
That's
of you.
Right.
And you guys cut back on the amount and complexity of music in that show, too. I mean, when you're doing Lame Ducks, there's usually a whole cast musical cabaret number that did not happen in this year's show.
No, that did not happen. But although we did do a number of parody solo songs, which we recorded actually over at Soldotna High School. Paul Wright was kind enough to help us record that, and we did it on stage. You know, you're standing alone, a big empty room, 800 seats, there's nobody in there, you're just singing your song, but the nice thing about radio is you can add in applause and anything you want, really. One of the big debates that we had about Lame Ducks and Dark Horses on the radio was, what are we going to do as far as an audience response? Mm-hmm. And so we thought about doing a laugh track, and then thought better of it and decided, no, we'll just we'll just go with just a straight performance. And if it's funny, then people will laugh at home, I suppose.
I'm curious to get everybody's take on this, how performances are maybe better or maybe worse doing them, you know, through Zoom or rehearsals through Zoom or being streamed online or over the radio. How are you guys finding ways to still connect with audiences, or do you think these formats still connect in the same way with audiences? It seems like you're inherently losing something without a crowd right in front of you giving you that feedback. But, you know, on the other hand, maybe you have a little more control over levels and nuance and sound effects and all that fun stuff that is normally pretty challenging during a live show. So are you guys seeing silver linings? Rebecca, maybe we'll start with you.
Sure. I think it really kind of, you know, it's like a different answer for each project that, you know, we're working with. Like, I would say, so the, you know, the first thing that we did as an organization coming out of, you know, the initial lockdown, or I guess while we were still in the initial lockdown, was our throwback concert. And that, I think, actually, just because of the nature of it, where it was, you know, taking like old footage and photos and stuff from all of, you know, these like 40 years of shows that we've been doing and stuff, and it, you know, and really fitting it to the medium of it was a video, and having that editing available and stuff, and because it was on Facebook, so people were able to like watch it live together and then, you know, have the comments and stuff. So I think that actually was kind of really surprising how much it touched people, and it ended up like touching me and stuff. But then, yeah, rehearsals, so we rehearsed the music for Little Women. We've been rehearsing the music for Little Women since November, December, and most of it has been on Zoom. And it is hard, and it's also, you know, impossible to rehearse over Zoom if you have more than one person in a song and they're not in the same space together, because, you know, timing, and that's hard. But I think what the pandemic has, you know, kind of given us and forced us to do is look at all of these other forms of technology that are available to us, and how can it help us in, you know, still creating high quality theater in different ways. Like I'm really excited with, so we'll live stream, we're planning to live stream all three shows for the remainder of our season. And one of the way we're doing that is that we have members of just like our, you know, volunteers, cast members and stuff who, it's Spring Sabayan and Rob Lewis, who are both IT professionals. So they have, you know, the knowledge and know-how of how to get us to get a decent live stream and stuff. And then it just opens it up for more and more people to be able to use and see what we do.
Well, the other thing, I want to add something to what Rebecca said. And, you know, one of the advantages that you don't get in a live performance that you do get on an online performance is that direct, immediate feedback of comments. It's honestly a lot of fun. You know, I remember when the Kenai performers did their musical event. People had a great time, like saying, "Oh, I remember that show," and I remember, you know, or being able to say to someone, "Analia, that was beautiful. Good job." It's very immediate, and it surprised me at how it created that community that we get from sitting in an audience together watching something. I saw the same thing with Lame Ducks and Dark Horses. People just had a great time being able to comment while it was going on. You know, it's very, very cool.
Well, and I think one of the things too is that, you know, throughout the pandemic, like, it's not like entertainment went away. Like, there were, you know, we were all watching Tiger King and like all these kind of, you know, like mass entertainment things, but being able to have that really personalized, localized, you know, entertainment is important. And being able to, you know, we're a small community, we all remember, you know, these things and we all love them and stuff. So to be able to just find new ways to share it, I think is This is just a good thing to remind ourselves of and to keep striving towards.